right, Payne and Pendergast with you. You can text the show 713-572-4610. Executives, coaches, and scouts on ESPN.com ranking the NFL's top 10 defensive tackles for 2025. We did running backs yesterday. They're doing each position group going into next, you know, going it's for about a week and a half. There's 11 position groups. They do all of them. And Seth and I kind of went through them yesterday. Each of them said, kind of predicted where we thought the Texans would have some representation. This was not a position where we thought there would be representation, defensive tackle. Doesn't mean that we're disappointed in the group. You can't have all pros everywhere. But for what D'Amico Ryans wants to do, the group they have, and we'll go into the Texans-related guys in Texans-adjacent guys in this list. No actual Houston Texans, but I think there are a few names in here that Texan fans would be interested to hear about. But for those who missed it yesterday, Seth, not a big issue that there's not going to be any Texan names at this position. They've got a good group of kind of blue-collar guys at that position right now.
Yeah, they've got – well, and yes, they could definitely approve at any given time. I think that the run defense was better than it sometimes felt last year, and they tweaked some things that made it better in the second half of the season. But, yeah, at any given time, if they could get a guy like Jalen Carter in there, sure, it would make them a better defense.
Yes.
But which begs the question, all right, you guys could have had Jalen Carter.
That's where that's where I was going. So number one on here is Dexter Lawrence. Number two, Chris Jones. No arguments there. Number three on this list.
I take Dexter Lawrence over Chris Jones, but yes, go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and
right, I was saying if I had to choose one of those guys.
Yep. Yeah. Jalen Carter is third on this list after just two seasons. You know, and you look, and it's a lot of, like, after him, it's Jeffrey Simmons, who's been here forever. Quinnen Williams has been around. He's 27 years old. Leonard Williams is 31. Justin Matabike is 27. Like, Jalen Carter is a freak and a phenom, and he's 24 years old, and he's heading into his third year. And he's on the freaking Philadelphia Eagles, which makes it even worse. The Eagles were shrewd on draft night. They moved up to number nine. In a draft where Jalen Carter, independent of all the off-field stuff, you know, he was part of that drag racing incident in Georgia where people actually died, and there were other things, too, at Georgia that affected his draft stock. But as a pure talent, for most of that draft season, Jalen Carter was number one on a lot of big boards, and that was a draft that had Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson, Will Anderson Jr. So we know in that draft, Seth, the Texans drafted C.J. Stroud at two. Then they moved up from 12 to 3 to take Will Anderson. And I would say that that move has worked out tremendously 2 years. And I think Will's going to be on this list for edge rushers today when it comes out in the top 10. I don't know if it'll be three like Jalen Carter. But, if we're going to look at all the angles with this, right, even though we love Will Anderson, the Texans could have paid a whole lot less to move up from 12 to 9 where Jalen Carter was drafted, taking Jalen Carter, and now you've got – at least as a football player, not as a human being. Will Anderson is maybe no higher character player in the NFL than Will Anderson. But Jalen Carter, the player, is at a level that Will Anderson's not at right now.
Right, and that's, so obviously, because of the Will Anderson dynamic, I've got zero issues with it whatsoever.
Yeah.
I think the question would be, all right, it looks like the Texans have changed their ways in terms of taking chances on potential character risk guys.
Yeah.
But there's a limit to that, and I think that, man, the Eagles operate differently than the Texans in a lot of ways, and they've obviously had a lot of success with it. I think when it comes to drafting a guy like Jalen Carter, I would guess that the Texans are still of the mindset that, yeah, we will take Jalen Carter, we'll sign him if he fails with the Eagles.
Yeah,
we like the upside physically, but we're just not sure about him with the character side of things, and to spend a first round pick on a guy who might have serious character concerns and give him a boatload of guaranteed millions of guaranteed dollars. Yeah. That's risky. So credit to the Eagles, cause it's worked out.
They've shown,
I think, that they've got a pretty good knack for getting the best out of guys that might have some sketchy character things. But I don't think that's where the Texans would be right now. I would have been surprised then if they traded up for Jalen Carter, but even now, with the way they've changed a little bit and they're willing to take more chances, I don't think they're willing to take that big a chance with the first rounder.
Yeah, yeah, you nailed it. I think they're definitely willing to take chances, but it's on the equivalent of like a scratch-off ticket. You know, like it's if it works out, great. If not, we just spent $5 on a scratch-off ticket. The two guys that come to mind immediately in the last year were Deontay Johnson, who they brought in, and he clearly hadn't changed his ways, and they ejected on him. And what was the cost to do that? Dollars, you know, just and not a ton. He had been he was on, that was the fourth team he'd been on in a calendar year, so it was not a whole lot. Damon Arnett is the most recent one, you know, that they gave a 1 year, literally 1 year minimum veteran salary to, and he's got all kinds of peccadillos in his background. Yeah. If it doesn't work out, you can cut him by August, you know?
You know, just looking at the first round draft in 2023, mm-hmm. if you're going to take a chance on Jalen Carter,
yeah.
right now with the benefit of hindsight, would you rather take a chance on Anthony Richardson or Jalen Carter? The Colts drafted okay. Anthony Richardson. Jalen Carter was just sitting right out there.
I wonder if that's a topic up in Indianapolis. You know, I'm saying with this list out today. I'm not saying every day on their show, but if you're up in Indianapolis and you're looking at this thing, I mean, I'm cool with, I'm a billion percent cool with CJ Stroud and Will Anderson as the two guys. I'm bringing it up just because it's worth, I think it's a discussion worth having. And I think the angle you brought up with the Texans maybe being more willing to look at guys like this is really interesting. Is that something that at any point manifests itself in the draft at some point down the road is a really interesting angle. But the Indianapolis thing is.
Well, you know, but I would say, because obviously with hindsight it's easy. I would still have to say, look, you took a swing at a quarterback with freakish natural ability.
Yeah, yeah.
So that he had his question marks. In a previous version of the NFL, it would have been idiotic because he's clearly a project and clearly injury prone. But now as desperate, especially the Colts, how desperate have they been for quarterbacks forever? Like, the upside of Anthony Richardson was so high that I get it. I can't crush the inbred Colts for this.
No. The other angles Texans related on here, Jeffrey Simmons is fourth on this list. So he's still going to be a pain in the ass.
Boo that man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what's bothering me more than anything about the fact that the Texans' interior offensive line just got destroyed by the Titans' interior defensive line?
Yeah.
In the first game, the game that mattered.
Yep.
It's just like Tavondre Sweat. I was really torn on him. He's the other defensive tackle out of Texas who's about 350 on an intermittent fasting day. So he's a big dude. Yeah. He is really, really big. Yeah. And I'm looking at him and I'm thinking like, oh, he's kind of a dinosaur in terms of what you do with guys these days in the NFL. But man, I loved the way he played. I loved that. For a big guy like that, I thought he actually hustled pretty well.
Yeah.
You're physiologically limited at a certain point, but it reminded me a little bit of, you know, you'd watch Ted Washington, and Ted would make plays on the sidelines, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ted Washington and Tavondre Sweat is kind of that size of a human, and it looks like it was a smart move for them.
Second round pick, and
it's a divisional opponent who has an extreme strength now versus an extreme weakness last year, at least for the Texans.
Yeah, yeah. An extreme weakness last year, and at a minimum, a huge question mark this year. At best, a huge question mark. Jeffrey Simmons is four. Got to deal with him. Quinnen Williams, noted C.J. Stroud concussor, is number five on this list.
It's his calling card, basically. Yeah.
It's his finishing
move. And you know what, too? Well, let's see. The C.J. Stroud concussion came at the hands of Juice Scruggs.
Yeah.
And then Kenyon Green got injured by C.J. Stroud as Quinnen Williams had beaten Kenyon Green.
Was that the Jets game?
Kenyon got destroyed by Quinnen Williams, if I remember correctly, and C.J. got kind of whipsawed back into Kenyon Green's legs. So, hey, like, Jeffrey Simmons, you could call it a mercy killing, perhaps, but, you know, Jeffrey Simmons used C.J. Stroud as a lethal weapon on that play.
Quinnen Williams, you mean?
Quinnen Williams, the
whole Kenyon Green thing. Leonard Williams, 6. Matabike is 7. Go Aggies, there you go. DeForest Buckner is 8, speaking of the Colts, so the Texans got to deal with him. Vita Vea, 9. The name I kept waiting for, Vita Vea, 9. Cam Hayward, 10. Honorable mention, Christian Wilkins, Las Vegas Raiders.
Oh.
And that's the name I was scrolling down the list, that's the one I was waiting for, because that is the overpay that I wanted to have in the offseason where the Texans had all that cap space 2 years ago. And Lopez basically wanted to drive Nick Caserio to the airport because he hadn't overspent in the first 2 hours of free agency. Had he overspent on the first 2 hours of free agency, they might have wound up with Christian Wilkins, who signed like 15 minutes into free agency for over market dollars to go to the Raiders, and he played five games last year because of injury.
So if you're looking at this top 10 list and you might wonder, all right, I don't know, I don't care about guys on other teams. Just wait, my friends, because of these top 10 defensive tackles, the beleaguered Texans interior offensive line will face Chris Jones once. They'll face Jeffrey Simmons twice. They'll face, they don't play the Jets this year.
They don't.
They'll play Leonard Williams. Leonard Williams, I think, had the most pressures by an interior defensive lineman last year. They'll play DeForest Buckner twice. They'll play Vita Vea, and so of those, they'll get a good dose of the top 10 here.
And DeForest Buckner twice, Vita Vea, and then you keep going. You know, you keep going down here, and
The honorable mention guys, Christian like Wilkins,
Zach Allen, Wilkins, Kobe Turner in the first game of the year, Rams.
First game of the year is a big one. If you're nervous about the offensive line, which you should be, realistically, I'm optimistic that they're going to be better than they were last year, but that's not necessarily saying a whole lot.
Yeah, that's right.
That first game versus the Rams is a test.
Yeah, man.
That is a test.
Yep.
Though they've got young studs all over that that front seven for the Rams. So I'm excited, but also peeing in my pants a little bit. I'm like a dog. I'm super excited for it, but I'm so excited that I'm peeing.
There's a puddle underneath you, like, oh, God. I mean, he's a happy dog, but, oh, he's walking around in his own pee right now. Edge rushers come out.
I'm a chihuahua.
Excited
and happy, but also nervous all the time.
There you go. So Barnwell, as long as we're on ranking things right now, Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com also did a piece where he ranks the wide receiver, tight end, running back groups as a whole, like the collective skill position groups. Yeah. You know, he said the sum total of them, not each of the groups, but just taking O-line and quarterback out of that side of the ball and saying, who's got the best skill position guys, basically. Texans, 14th on this list, so right in the middle of the pack. With the wide receiver room, which is obviously massively been redone, but I think with some talented guys, the tight end room is what it is right now. I think that's one of their weaknesses until we see otherwise. And then Joe Mixon and Nick Chubb. 14th feels about right for the Texans as skill positions go. Now, for some just real quick, Seth, for some context, this same article that Barnwell did 2 years ago, before C.J. Stroud had taken a snap, they were 32nd in the league. We learned that that wasn't the case. They had good skill guys that just needed a better quarterback. Last year, they were 4th after the Stephon Diggs trade and bringing in Joe Mixon. You know,
honestly, the biggest element here, this is where when you try to figure out, okay, how good is the Texans wide receivers group and or pass catchers and everything else like that. Nick Haley obviously is the huge X factor.
Big time.
Where CJ Stroud himself needs to improve is just versus cover two. So when you got two safeties back there and the veteran NFL quarterbacks know, all right, we're not going to go for aerial fireworks here. We're going to, if there's an easy option early in the down versus cover two, take it. I was talking back and forth with Clint yesterday. I sent him a play from the Patriots game because it was obvious cover two. And, you know, CJ could see them shift to cover two. And immediately in the down, they're in five-man pass protection. So ideally you get rid of the ball quickly. Mm-hmm. And Dalton Schultz is open. And it's probably a 10-yard reception. And there, meanwhile, it's early in the game, so there's no reason to be desperate. It was second and 11. And they're backed up. They're on the 10 or 15-yard line. So, like, that is a classic case of a young quarterback turning down the easy money.
Yeah.
All the old cliches. Don't go broke taking a profit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He turns it down, and he's waiting, and he's looking out to Nico to see what's going to develop. A veteran quarterback looks at that and says, yep, boom, easy. Just, nope, get it to Dalton.
Get in, forget a first down. Keep
you know, but
CJ moving.
Tries to stretch it out and ends up dumping it off to Damian Pierce for a 2 or 3 yard gain. And like, that's the thing that, you know, I give young quarterbacks excuses on stuff like that because it's not a matter of intelligence or anything. It's almost just having to have it pounded into you through rough experience. Pat Mahomes went through it the same way. So CJ last year, why it's important. CJ last year was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league against cover two. Guess who saw the most cover two in the league last year? The Texans were up there. They saw they were the like top five in the amount of cover two that they saw.
Yep.
Some of that's on Bobby, and I think Bobby not always giving him the easy options versus cover two, or Bobby himself being a little too desperate to get downfield. But some of it's got to be on CJ, and it's a typical transition for young quarterbacks. It's not. It's you expect it. It's an exception, and usually the guys that. This is where Ted Johnson's old phrase, you know, you want a puppy that bites when it's little. If they don't bite when they're little, they won't bite when they're big.
They won't bite when they're big, yeah.
You'd rather be in the position of having to tame down a player's aggressive tendencies than trying to teach him to be, you know, Tua Tagovailoa gets rid of the ball real quickly, and he'll take the easy money all day long.
Yep.
But it's becoming predictable.
Yep.
You know, I'd much rather have a quarterback that's eager for the deep stuff, but when CJ's going back and watching film this year, he's going to see instances where, man, that was obviously cover two. They're taking away the deep ball. I've got offensive line issues to begin with.
Yeah.
Why am I waiting for stuff to develop downfield when there's something easy in front of me? And just get the ball out of your hands. And so, you know, hopefully what you get with Kaylee is a guy that's better at teaching and managing that side of it, the psychology of it, than perhaps Bobby Slowick.
Well, this is where I like, you know, CJ did the, I don't know, it was a press conference, an interview that he did, whatever it was recently, where he said, we've been watching a ton of Tom Brady film.
Yeah.
That is music to my ears based on what you're saying right now about some of the stuff you were watching from last season, you know?
And that's where it gets exciting with Woody Marks, the running back, is a potential receiver, because when you watch Tom Brady and the way he operated, the check down was not a dirty word or an option of last resort. When you see what the coverage is, and in your brain you know, like, probably nothing here. Yeah, and then you play the odds games, get it to the running back as soon as possible, and then all of a sudden James White is in the Pro Bowl.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. You think James White was going to do that anywhere else?
Right.
God, no.
Right.
God, no.
Right.
Look at James White and his history and everything. There's not a chance. The best thing that ever happened to him by far was going to the New England Patriots.
Yes.
So, like, learning to use that and being at that advanced level, Brady didn't really get there until midway through his career.
Right.
And it's not because he was dumb or anything like that. It's just it takes time for quarterbacks to really learn and understand that, hey, you want deep ball opportunities? Hit this easy stuff underneath.
Yeah, for sure.
Set it up. It's the same as the – it's like it's equivalent to the play action in a lot of regards. Yep. Like, just start carving them up over the middle. You're going to have an opportunity at some point.
C.J. Stroud's watching Tom Brady film. Woody Marks should be watching James White, Deion Lewis, Rex Burkhead, Brandon Bolden, Shane Vereen. These are all the guys that made plays for the Patriots on their way to all these Super Bowls out of the backfield, no doubt. So 14th, I think 14th feels about right for that group. And we'll see. Like, if there were something, what's the most likely thing to happen this year, Seth, with the Texans' skill positions that would have people saying, say, midway or late in the season that the Texans' skill position group is actually, like, fifth or sixth in the league?
Like, I think in a lot of respects, this feels like 2 years ago when, you know, people weren't going to give Nico Collins a whole bunch of credit because he hadn't done anything yet.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, with the right mix, boom, all of a sudden Nico Collins is really good. So likewise with Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel, if you're outside of Houston analyzing this objectively, you can't look at a second and third round wide receivers and just assume that they're going to be these great phenoms.
Yeah.
So, and I'm very optimistic about both those guys, but they are rookies. So we just don't know. So the most likely scenario is that I think if Christian Kirk stays healthy, people remember that, like, oh, yeah, Christian Kirk with a good quarterback and healthy is actually a really good receiver. And then you have those two young receivers. That's where it could vault them up really high. If those,
oh, yeah.
We're playing the parlay game here a little bit. But if Christian Kirk is healthy and then if Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel are both having promising rookie seasons, that looks really, really good.
Hell
and it's
yeah.
But it's a reasonable parlay.
Yep.
This isn't a Bill O'Brien eight play parlay.
No,
you know?
No. God, no. And I don't even think that you need, like, in this year, like, both the rookies to, like, in a Bill O'Brien world, they would have needed both rookies to have worked out. Like, if one of them becomes a 60 or 65 catch guy in this season, it'd be nice if both of them eventually did, then I think you're laughing. If
this would be like a three bet parlay, but where you still earn money with if you get two
right. Yeah, I like that.
So if all three of those things happen, we win $1,000.
Yeah.
But if only two of them happen, we still win $700.
We like that. Yeah, I like that a lot. Did you know that the critically acclaimed Netflix series Quarterback dropped yesterday?
Only because you texted me about it.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't realize it, because I love hate watching that.
I do too. And I've yet to watch it, so maybe that'll be my project for today. But a few of the clips have dropped, and the one that got the most run from a news standpoint was that Kirk Cousins felt misled by the Atlanta Falcons last year when they gave him 4 years, $180 million in March.
God, I'd love to be misled that way.
And I know. Mislead me all day long. And then a month and a half later, they drafted Michael Penix Jr. with the 8th overall pick in that draft, the quarterback out of Washington. And now it's Penix's show there. And Kirk Cousins, I think, is still on the team, but kind of sitting in limbo with the Falcons. Like, his name comes up with certain teams that may or may not have quarterback issues, I guess, still.
Yeah. Play this Cousins audio, and then I'm going to tell him why he's No.
Okay, there's two clips. Right. So let's start with the one. This is him telling the story about his negotiations. You know, his contract was up in Minnesota. He was coming off a torn Achilles, and Minnesota is negotiating with him to possibly bring him back to the Vikings for another year. Here was the story about the contract offer he got from the Vikings.
I didn't want to leave Minnesota. There was nothing about anywhere that made me want to leave Minnesota. We wanted to be in Minnesota. But it became clear that we were going to be there year to year. And that's what we didn't want. And at that point, we said, all right, we need to look elsewhere. If that's our only option, then we'll be back. And when we said, well, we looked around and we found there's an opportunity that would be a longer commitment. Would you be interested in giving us that longer commitment? They said, nope, we're good with our offer. And I said, okay, you made my decision really easy.
Okay. Yeah, so he's obviously referring to Atlanta there of the
team that's
offering multiple years there. So he's Minnesota's like, all right, well, we'll see.
Right,
you later.
No, and that makes sense though too, because money is love. That's the commitment. How much are you actually willing to? Easy to say we're committed to you, but cough up the money. And I get that. I get that from a veteran player who wants to win a championship at some point.
Wants to win a championship.
Wants to win some primetime games potentially at some point in his life.
That would be nice. You know? Yeah, that would be nice. And I think, too, I mean, if you ever watch anything about Kirk Cousins on these, he was on the first Quarterback documentary they did, and now he's on this one. He's a very family-oriented guy. So I think there's, if I had to guess, part of it of him not wanting to be this one-year refugee on all these different teams all the time is that he wants to go somewhere where now I can put down roots for a few years with, you know, he's got young kids.
Oh, yeah, he's a damn Norman Rockwell painting. He's a, you know, he's a rock solid American dad.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't fault anybody for this is my criteria and this team wants to do it and this team doesn't, so I'm going to go here. That's fine. This is Kirk Cousins, though, talking about after he signs in the middle of March with the Falcons for huge money, for a guy coming off an Achilles tear. $45 million a year. Atlanta drafts Michael Penix Jr. 6 weeks later, and he said he felt misled by the Falcons.
Ended up signing with Atlanta and was pretty excited about the chance to get down there and start fresh. And then, you know, was pretty surprised when the NFL draft happened.
With the 8th pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Atlanta Falcons select Michael Penix Jr.
Well, there it is.
Wow. Wasn't expecting us to take a quarterback so high. At the time, it felt like I had been a little bit misled, or certainly if I had the information around free agency, it certainly would have affected my decision. I had no reason to leave Minnesota with how much we loved it there if both teams are going to be drafting a quarterback high. But I've also learned in 12 years in this league that you're not entitled to anything. It's all about being able to earn your spot and prove yourself.
Okay. Yeah, okay. No reason to. Okay, yeah, okay. Listen, Kirk, I get it. Okay, you're painting yourself as the. You're trying to give yourself the moral high ground. Yet at the same point, you've already conceded that, hey, this other team was able to make a financial commitment. He didn't say that they made promises to him or anything. They just made a bigger financial commitment. If what you cared about was staying in Minnesota, stay in Minnesota and prove it. Just prove it. Just keep playing. Keep the first rounder on the bench, okay? You felt misled. Dude, you're like, this is like a 50-year-old dude who's a veteran of the strip clubs fall in love with a stripper. You know, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's
true. Or no, even worse, you fell in love with a prostitute.
That's true.
You just, you look, what, because, you know, fall in love with a stripper, if, you, if you're a veteran, then you probably know what you're doing. You fell in love with a prostitute, okay?
Yeah.
And you felt misled by them. I thought that after we had a cash transaction that this was for real.
That's my biggest
thing.
And
then you don't have to say it out loud.
Right.
You don't have to say it in front of a camera either.
Right. Yeah, he's still on the team, you know. Like
right.
So, my two biggest issues with what he said there, saying he felt misled, and he said something to the effect of, you know, if they had just told me that, then that would have affected, you know, my decision making. Who are you to expect that an NFL team is going to share their plans with you on anything? You know, like that's it is a rare player that gets any sort of input. You know, that gets any sort of information. Or even an input on what a team is thinking of doing in the draft. That's number one. Number two, there were 6 weeks in between you signing and the draft. It could very well be that in that interim period, they either rethought things a little bit. They maybe, I don't know if they were doing medicals on your
physical,
Achilles.
And well, remember, that was one of the other things. There was the tampering allegations and everything that maybe there was like the his physical and his recovery from his injury was a factor.
Was a factor, and so maybe they saw something there where they got nervous about the injury. I mean, it's an NFL team; they got to do what's in their best interest. So misled implies that they were supposed to have shared something with you.
Yeah.
Dude, they gave you $180 million over 4 years. What the hell are you talking about?
This is what's annoying about it is he's trying to play both sides of it. Yeah. He's trying to play the devoted family man who wants to do things for the right reasons. But if that's how if you felt that strongly about it, you could have waited until after the draft to sign your contract.
That's true.
You know, you took out $180 million contract.
Yeah.
And again, you don't have to say any of this stuff on camera. If you did say it on camera, the more accurate thing might have been, I didn't realize they were this stupid. I didn't realize that they would give me $180 million and then draft the quarterback in the first round.
Yeah.
After giving a guy coming off an Achilles tendon tear in his upper 30s $180 million.
Yeah.
I thought they were smarter than that.
Yeah, it's very tone deaf. I mean, he just sounds completely delusional. The other bit of audio that dropped from quarterback on Netflix was Joe Burrow. On the sidelines, Joe Burrow and Kirk Cousins are two of the quarterbacks that they're focused in on with this documentary on Netflix. Just dropped yesterday. And Joe Burrow seems to hate his team in this particular clip. This is, now, I want to set this up because there is some, you know, just some football noise for a little bit of this. This is the Week 15 win that the Bengals had over the Tennessee Titans. They beat the Titans 37-27. However, in this game, the Bengals offensive line had 8 pre-snap penalties in this game. It was bad.
Yeah.
And so what you're going to hear...
Second worst offensive line in football, according to PFF.
That's right.
Don't ask me about who the first
one is. I'm not sure. I didn't get that far in the article. So what you're going to hear at the beginning is Joe Burrow coming off the field after his offensive line. They were trying to convert a short yardage situation. I'm guessing it was a fourth down. They jump off sides, so now the punt team or whatever's got to come out. Burrow is coming to the sidelines dog cussing people, and then you're going to hear Burrow continue to dog cuss and Zach Taylor try to talk him off the ledge at the end, which is some fascinating audio. Take a listen.
False start. Offense. The penalty train rolls on.
Oh, what the f*** are we doing, man? Wake the f*** up! Mental mistakes all f***ing day.
Way to finish the day. That's a great drive to finish it. I know it's a frustrating,
embarrassing performance by us. F***ing embarrassing.
And listen, we'll address it. We'll address it. But at the same time, let's enjoy some
f***ing that. F*** that. We sucked today. That was embarrassing.
Okay.
We jumped off sides f***ing 8 times.
I know that.
Sometimes I walk into an emotional moment that I know I'm walking into an emotional
Zach
moment
Taylor.
And it becomes a really emotional moment and it may be viewed as conflict. It's really just passion for the game.
You know, I understand that we won the game and we want to be happy that we win the game, but at the same time, when things aren't good enough, I'm not going to act like they were.
Okay. I like it.
I like it too. I'm curious about what the I didn't see any of the social media how they die. I would assume that most people in Cincinnati liked that too.
Oh, they're always going to side with Burrow, I think. Up there.
Yeah. I mean, you got a high standard, and it wasn't good enough. This isn't the same as if a quarterback himself has a bad game, but you win the game, and he's somehow like acting like this. He was PO'd about the entire functioning of the operation. They just couldn't do these things that you just flat out with simple, fundamentally sound football you could do. I'm cool with that.
They won the game 37-27. I mean, they scored 37 points in this game, but Joe Burrow was fixated on the tons of mistakes they made on the offensive line. I'm just watching this and just to bring it back.
At that point, the game was still going on. It wasn't like the game was over, right?
No. The last part was at the very end of the game, sitting on the bench with Zach Taylor talking to him. They were up 10 and the game was winding down and he was angry about the game. So my thought, Seth, is would you like to see some of that out of C.J. Stroud? I mean, the only offensive line that's rated as worse than the Bengals is the one that kept jumping off sides last year here in Houston.
I try real hard not to act like there's a certain personality a quarterback has to have because so many guys do it in such different ways. Same like with NFL head coaches. There's so many different ways to do it. And what you always have to remember is we get these snippets when guys are mic'd up, and all of a sudden that becomes, that's the way Joe Burrow is. And C.J. Stroud isn't, because I haven't seen a snippet of him acting this way or that way. So, there's no one appropriate way for a quarterback to act.
I'm with you on all that. I don't want people to be phony either. Like, if C.J., people can see through that. With Burrow, I just wonder... I wonder if some of that has to do. Look, Burrow's been around since 2020. He's a more veteran guy. He's got more pelts on the wall. Probably feels more like he can act that way, both with his head coach and with his teammates. If you were listening at the beginning, when he's like, wake the bleep up, he's yelling at his offensive linemen about that. And maybe it's something that when you're a younger player, you feel that way. You feel like it would be the right thing to do, but I'm still only in my second year, that kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah. No, 100%. There is that element to it. But it's also, like, again, the mic'd up element comes into it. We saw CJ at training camp at times stopping a drill and giving a hard talking to guys.
Good point.
And then you get into a point where the offense was struggling so much. That's where it gets really difficult for a younger quarterback, I think, is that you got to navigate that line of, do I really have enough pelts on the wall to be a guy that's tearing into Laremy Tunsil and all of that? And maybe trading Laremy Tunsil had a little bit to do with that. Remember when the Giants got rid of Shockey? There was a perception that, man, Eli Manning is kind of still like little brother to Shockey, and Shockey is a big personality. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that maybe paved the way, at least in their thinking, was that Eli could kind of, this could be his team now. So there is some turnover with the veteran players that makes it, as you become a genuinely vested veteran.
So I
guess to answer your question, sure, I'd love to see more of it, but I also am always just really skeptical of just kind of cherry-picking times when guys are mic'd up to figure out how a quarterback operates.
Yeah. I think it's pretty telling that he was that way sitting there as the clock's winding down in a 10-point win, and that was in Week 15, so you know the Bengals are feeling the pressure, the urgency. They were trying to claw their way back into the playoff race at that point, too.
I guess you know what it is? It's that because he's mic'd up, you see it.
Yeah.
And then it gets treated like it's remarkable or that this doesn't happen all the time.
But
it is, like, usually almost every single sideline blow-up I see, I would say 95% of them are way overly dramatized in the media. Like, usually the stuff, a lot of times, the stuff that happens on the sideline, this is exactly how it happens sometimes. When a coach and a player are going at it, sometimes a player, this happened to me a couple times, I would go to my position coach after the game, and they're like, hey, man, I'm sorry I lost my temper on you. And in both times, once in college, once in the NFL, the position coach was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, yeah, like, remember when after the, like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about that. Like, it's just, it's really not that big a deal.
Right, it's how a sideline operates in football. All right, Peyton Penner.
Now, like, the Tom Brady versus Bill O'Brien, that was a pretty epic one.
That was fun.
That was epic, yeah. And that was, knowing, finding out and learning about Bill O'Brien, it later on, you realize exactly that. If you guys go back on YouTube at some point today and watch that blow up between Tom Brady and Bill O'Brien, you could see what happened was Tom Brady had acknowledged that he'd made a mistake, but O'Brien kept hammering
it. Wouldn't let it go.
Yeah. Like, it's like when you say, yeah, I know, man, I messed up. And somebody's like, hey, you messed up. And Tom Brady's like, I know, you stupid teapot mother. Yeah.
I want to go watch that during the break now. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Let's circle back to the Astros. And the All-Star game is next week. Numbers that make you realize why Jim Crane does business the way that he does. This is some pretty remarkable stuff that we will get to coming up next. It's Wednesday, so it's not Pettycast Day. Pettycast Day on the show is Tuesday at 8 o'clock, but there is one thing that I'm very happy about with the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. I just like the fact that Juan Soto didn't make it. Didn't make it as a starter, didn't make it as a reserve, the highest paid player, biggest contract ever, 15 years, $755 million, whatever it was. And I think he's making, according to SpotRack, $61 million this year. Didn't make the All-Star team. I'm very petty about the Juan Soto contract and signing, Seth. I want it to fail miserably up in New York.
I've been torn on this because for maximum Yankees misery, especially as the Yankees have been scuttling as of late, I was hoping that the Juan Soto contract would work out incredibly well.
Yeah, that's
and
a
that
good
Yankees
point.
Fans would somehow convince themselves that the Yankees are too cheap.
Yeah.
You know, because they're such spoiled children.
They won't.
They're just accustomed to getting what they want
right,
when they want
right.
it.
The Steinbrenners won't go the extra mile to win championships. It's interesting because according to SpotRac, 7 of the top 10 highest paid players for this season are not going to the All-Star game. And we're talking guys that are making 38, 37, you know, 40 million bucks. Soto is the highest one at 60 plus million. And then the next three highest all made it. Zach Wheeler, 42. Aaron Judge, 40, which feels like the biggest bargain ever. Aaron Judge at 40 million feels like an incredible bargain compared to Juan Soto.
I would say the one thing, and I hate to dampen your enthusiasm about this a little bit, is that Juan Soto got off to a really slow start.
Yeah, he's
been
better.
But he's back up to his career numbers.
I get it. Yeah, no, it's just the optics
of
him.
So he's actually
been
better than average since the very beginning of the season.
That contract, I don't know if it'll age well, but they're going to get a good version of Juan Soto. I'm confident of that. I just like the optics of him not making the All-Star team on the first year of that deal, especially with some of the effort issues that he's had this year so far. Like not running out ground balls. The next three guys after Soto all made it. Zach Wheeler, Aaron Judge, Jacob DeGrom. They all made the All-Star team. The next six, I think, are almost a lesson in why Jim Crane does business the way that he does when it comes to big contracts, high-level free agents, not wanting to get hemmed in with 8, 9, 10, or 12-year deals, things like that. The next six guys, the next six highest-paid guys, Anthony Rendon, $38 million. Disastrous contract for the Angels. Horrific contract. Yeah. That's going to be on their books for years. Carlos Correa, $37.3 million. Not been a good contract for the Minnesota Twins so far. Mike Trout, that's been
Mike Trout, it's kind of the point, dear listeners, where some of our younger listeners have actually texted in at times, what has Mike Trout ever done anyway?
Yeah, right.
Like, I don't. How many MVPs did he win?
He was in the top five for like eight straight years or something.
It's been just a long time where, you haven't seen complete seasons out of Mike Trout. But trust me, children.
Yeah.
At one point, he was magnificent.
I take those texts for me and you personally, Seth, as encouraging. It means there is a younger audience out there. That'll carry us through our twilight years on the radio. Yeah, and they're the ones that don't know who the hell Mike Trout is on the Los Angeles Angels.
Yeah, now do me a solid, youngsters. Teach me some of this lingo. What is Riz? I don't get it. Just tell me. I thought I knew what Aura was, but it feels like it's slightly different now than it used to be.
Yeah.
I'm lost. I'm lost. I'm an old man.
You know what I got hit with yesterday that I had to look up? Someone told me that I had a take on Jabari. I don't want to get too far off track. I had a take on Jabari Smith Jr.'s contract versus Paolo Banchero's contract, which I'll dig into the take later in the show. Suffice it to say, there were a lot of people out there that thought that it was a silly take. It was a stupid take. I was backing up Jabari Smith Jr. And I know he's not as good as Paolo Banchero. I get that. But one particular person tweeting at me, I replied to it with my explanation, and they just said, "That's cope."
And I know that one.
You know that's basically.
I understand that. I understand that jargon.
You're trying to talk yourself into something you're delusional coping. About. Yeah. So I had to look that up.
I gotta tell you one thing, kids. You kids these days. I feel like a lot of your slang these days is just all you do is take a word, chop off part of it, and then like misuse it grammatically.
It's very lazy.
It's lazy. Yeah. It's lazy.
Yep.
It's born out of texting.
Yes.
I applaud your economy of motion, I suppose, but no. Throw in a metaphor or something there.
Something, man.
The streamers say copium.
Copium?
I kind of like that.
Okay.
Yeah, like because it's a mixture of cope and opium.
Oh, and opium? Okay,
yeah,
see, that's not bad.
Good job, Ben.
That's not bad.
That's why we have young Ben on the show.
That's right. Ben is our urban dictionary over there. That's who he is.
Ben, do you watch video game streaming?
Yeah.
Stream? You do?
Yep.
Okay, there you go.
I've started it. That's the one thing I'm trying to figure out that young people do that it was so foreign to me.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting it. I've like forced myself to sit down and watch some of the better video
games. Watch other people play video games?
Yeah, and it's the personality. It's like anything else. It's their commentary about it.
It's the fellowship of it. Yeah.
And I'm sure if I were into video games, I would definitely appreciate the guys that are really good at it.
Yeah.
I get that side of it.
I got you. Yeah.
But then some of them are just really entertaining personalities.
Yep. So Rendon, $38 million, bad contract. Carlos Correa, $37 million, bad contract. That would have been a 10 or 13 year deal if he was on a different team. It's six because he's got a ratchet leg. Mike Trout, horrible contract. Garrett Cole, $36 million, has won a Cy Young, but now is getting Tommy John surgery. If you get him for 8 or 9 years and it's a pitcher, there's a decent chance you're going to get some TJ in there.
Yeah.
Now Jose Altuve is on this list. He's the ninth one on this list. Didn't make the All-Star team. $33 million a year. But again, I think it illustrates the point with Jim Crane that I'm trying to make, which is Jose Altuve is on this list, but unlike these other fan bases that are probably like, oh, this contract, I don't think we're feeling that way with Jose Altuve and the five-year extension that he signed.
Altuve's contract de-escalates as it goes on. They accounted for the natural aging in his contract, so he's making less money at the end of the deal. Which is the exact opposite of the deals that people fear, which is you're still paying a guy that shouldn't even be playing Major League Baseball anymore $40 million a year 8 years from now.
Yeah, and look, is Altuve a $33 million player still? Probably not anymore, but he's not bad. He's still a productive hitter. And then Tyler Glasnow, who's been out all year for the Dodgers, they wouldn't shut up about it on Saturday, $32 million. So I think just looking at that list, Seth, yesterday, I know people wanted Kyle Tucker to be here for a long, long time, but you sign guys to 10 or 12-year deals, and Kyle Tucker's going to be on this list next year in terms of the amount of money that he's making. You know, he may make the All-Star team. He's going to be a guy making $45 to $50 million. I would guess, and it's going to be a 10-year deal, and whoever signs him is probably going to get a few good years out of it, but there's just as good a chance that they're going to get some really, really inefficient, sketchy years down the stretch with the deal.
Any of you smart business people here, tell me if I'm correct on this or not. This is how I choose to look at it, Sean. So the Astros are really good at developing talent. They've been great at finding Latin American prospects. They've been great at developing guys within their system. They develop a good product. But then at some point, they've said, no, we're not in the vertical integration game where we need to control the process from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
We are manufacturers. We're not going to get into the business of manufacturing something and then also trying to go out and put it to work.
Yeah.
We get guys through those first 6 years of their contract and then we focus on our core business, which is manufacturing great players.
Manufacturing,
if we try to get too far into the weeds with everything else, all of a sudden you're Sears and Roebuck.
I like that. Yeah, you're retail.
You try to do too much. You try to be all things to all people.
You're retail. You don't want to be. No, we're going to build. That's what we're going to do. Yeah. I like
that. Tell me if I'm using vertical integration the right way. So vertical integration would be, Sean, like you grow the crops.
Yeah.
You harvest them, yep. But then you don't just sell the crops. You end up like packaging them into granola bars and then selling them retail doing all that.
That's a lot.
Some people do it well, but some people they're better off just being farmers.
Yeah, that's it. That was
Astros are farmers.
Yes, that was my ex-wife's family was in the sugarcane business. That's all they did was grind the sugarcane, the raw sugar, and then they'd send it here to Imperial for them to refine the whole thing.
Yeah, they weren't manufacturing ho-hos.
Right.
They were good at what they did.
Right. They weren't bagging up Fun Dip in Patouville, Louisiana. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they did, though, then the next step in that is to buy an insulin company. Yeah, kind of feed the diabetes and then treat the diabetes.
Yeah, you're a genius. I blame you. Text message, I blame you guys for Cleveland winning, for bragging about all the series the Astros hadn't lost. We'll circle back to that. We should probably.
No, hey, look, even as we were bragging about it, I said yesterday that there's a good chance that the series that they lose is to one of the lesser teams.
Yes.
And, you know, and the Guardians, let's be honest, too. And I said this yesterday. This isn't like hindsight reasoning or anything. The Guardians are a little bit like the Astros in that it doesn't quite make sense that the Guardians have been as bad as they are.
Right.
The same way as it doesn't make sense that the Astros have been as good as they are.
Correct. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. If you want to text in, 713-572-4610. We haven't touched on the Astros in last night in a bit, so let's do that. And my role in what's happened, not only the last 2 days, but in Hunter Brown's two worst performances over the last year. We'll get into all that. We'll break down last night's game coming up next.